Penguin Random House Audio presents We Refuse to Forget, a true story of Black Creeks, American identity, and power. This is the author, Caleb Gale. A note to my listeners. This audio recording includes racial slurs as they appear in quotations. They are included because I believe it is vital that readers and listeners understand how normalized they were in that era and for generations that followed. For Peanut, for the fam, and for those whose stories are yet to be told. Introduction. I got Indian in me. It seemed that to capture the multiplicity and contradictory nature of this past, I would have to tell at least two stories, sketch two histories, enter two worlds, enlist two purposes, and sound two calls for justice at once. Dr. Taya Miles. My Jamaican family moved from New York City to Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the late 1990s with few expectations of running into a Black person. In a place that at the time was far less Black than the New York we had left, we were desperate to find people whose skin resembled ours in the institutions that could make us feel at home. Soon after moving, my parents found a Black church in North Tulsa, the part of the city where most of the Black people live and the place where 70 years earlier, Black Wall Street once stood tall and sprawled wide. When I was a kid there, most of these Black folks, especially those who had some history in this buckle of the Bible Belt, were known to say a peculiar and delicate phrase that now sounds so familiar. I got Indian in me. Their ancestors likely included people who had called one of the Five Nations home. I didn't know it then, but the Five Nations were actually called Five Civilized Tribes, an even more indelicate way of designating the Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Creek, and Seminole Indians in Oklahoma since at least 1866. But the kids who'd say that likely did not know this history, and neither did I. They passed as simply Black. At least I thought they did. As a child, I thought that Black people in America came from only a few places. From Africa and recently from a Caribbean country like my parents also recently, or by way of slave ships from the African continent hundreds of years ago. I assume the kids who said I got Indian in me were spreading myths or trying to explain why their skin was somewhat lighter and their hair a bit curlier than mine. But I dismissed these ideas too early. Those kids did not know the historical power they wielded in that phrase, because what they were saying was a simple sentence born of a strange, forgotten history, one hard to imagine in the bright bustle of turn of the millennium America. Even in the second decade of the 21st century, as Oklahoma fights over land, as courthouses hear challenges over identity, and as Congress is called to admit a new Cherokee representative, it is hard to grasp. But it is true. What my young friends didn't know when they boasted about their DNA was that their Native and Black ancestors walked hundreds of miles together from the southeastern United States to reach what became Oklahoma. Nor did they know that some of these Black ancestors came as slaves, others as adopted citizens, and still others as fully recognized members of the Creek Nation. And I'm willing to bet that none of them ever heard the name of one Black man, a former putative slave, who walked the Trail of Tears, a man dubbed Cow Tom by his former owner, a Creek chief. Like countless Native Americans, Cow Tom made that long, dangerous trek before he ultimately rose to leadership within the Creek Nation. In fact, it was Cow Tom who kept my friend's Creek identity intact when he negotiated an 1866 treaty with the U.S. government, an agreement that included citizenship rights for all Black people within the Creek Nation, whether slave, adopted, or free. It may seem odd that a son of Jamaican parents would find his way inside American history, especially inside the history of Black people about whom you've likely never heard in a state you've likely never visited. Like all history, how it started wasn't how anyone expected it to end. One day in 2019, I was sitting in the New York office of the British newspaper, The Guardian. I had worked there as a writer for 4 or 5 months. On this day, I was jostling between empty rooms and unoccupied desks while more senior writers and editors went to meetings, lunches, and vacations. I had no story on the books, and my editor and I had a meeting soon to figure out what I'd write next. I sat at my computer and typed www.tulsaworld.com into my web browser, not because I was looking for inspiration, but because I wanted a reminder that people could cover news and write stories about places and people most of the world didn't care about. What came up across the top of the Tulsa World's homepage were familiar faces and a story that claimed that the black people in the accompanying picture had been members of a nation that wasn't the United States and had freedom that their ancestors had given them in the Creek Nation, but not in the United States. I was intrigued and called some friends I grew up with, many of whom had told me when we were kids that they were part Indian. I knew I had a story, but I didn't realize that the piece I'd eventually write for The Guardian would lead me on a journey that reconfigured my notions of identity, race, and belonging. Looking back, it's odd that I wrote a story about Oklahoma, a place I wanted to forget, and a state whose mere mention often prompted any friend from anywhere else to ask, where is Oklahoma again? In telling you about the place that became my home, I can tell you about America and how America fashions its identity. And if the story has shown me anything, it's that there's nothing simple about who you are or where you come from. Like the people on the front page of the Tulsa World, descendants of Cow Tom and other black citizens of the Creek Nation, we are all beautifully complex. And there's nothing more American than struggling to fit all that complexity into boxes you did not create in the first place. We often forget who we are because we have never been given the chance to remember properly. The anti-lynching memorial at the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama, offers a radical chance to remember not just the highlights of the civil rights movement, but also the true pain and brutality of our nation's past. Such painful remembering of the violence that white people perpetrated against black people is required before we can build true racial reconciliation. Remembering with eyes wide open, I believe, is the first step to living out our moral obligations today. The fact that my classmates and I in Tulsa in the late 20th century didn't understand where we came from wasn't just bad schooling. It was the result of a deliberate attempt to prevent us from remembering, which is another way of saying that from an early age, black people were stopped from working to change a world that had been built on racialized, violent foundations. But what if we did know? What if we all knew about this story? Knowing this history would make the truth clearer. We'd know, for example, that Tulsa's struggles over land use, development, and zoning mask a larger story, one where city planners deliberately designed the city to ensure that different non-white populations would compete with one another instead of banding together to push back against the white ruling class. We'd know that the Cherokee people have as much right to seat a representative in Congress as do Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia. And they have this right based on signed treaties with the U.S. government, which the government has chosen to ignore. We'd know that the black members of the Creek Nation who were ejected from the tribe in 1979 should be reinstated into their political homeland. Nothing should be allowed to nullify the cultural promise and legal compact between the founding nation and its new members, no matter their race or background. And we'd know once and for all that white power and white supremacy are as old as the nation itself, as dangerous today as they were centuries ago. The history of Cow Tom's people demonstrates that white identity is too often used as a tool to divide those who are deemed other, irrelevant, or dangerous. And we'd know that white supremacy's true goal is to violently disrupt lives where there is money to be made and to erase from our collective cultural and political memories any path to becoming American that white men did not create. At the same time, knowing this history also makes some ideas less clear. For example,
sample complete. Ready to continue?